Blog Talk Radio.
Segment of Art Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Art Studies Live is the blogcast radio outreach of the Apologetic Research Center. ARC is a Christian ministry specializing in evangelism, Christian apologetics, and countercult studies. For more information about ARC, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Good afternoon and welcome to today's edition of Art Studies Live. I'm your host, Rick Young. Today what I hope to do is, if possible, to wrap up as much as I possibly can of the Nation of Islam segments. Again, it's kind of been long and drawn out because of the minor detour we took last week. But what I see is that individuals from the Nation of Islam, while they listen to the show, and we do have the capacity to watch the or to look at the how many individuals watch the show live and how many look at it in archive after the show is over, and it appears that either we have individuals who are interested in the Nation of Islam and they just want to hear what's going on, or we have individuals with the Nation of Islam who possibly just don't want to make an on-air comment. And so I'm assuming that maybe they've gotten what they've come for from what I was able to cover last week. And so I don't want to be redundant, but I do want to give every opportunity for individuals from the Nation of Islam who, quite frankly, to the ARC site are the number one hits relate to the Nation of Islam, coming from everywhere, from Farrakhan Factor, Freedom Forum, message boards. There's one that's dedicated to Tubac. They come there from there. They come from Wikipedia, Answers.com. It's amazing. And from almost every country. Seen them from everywhere, from China to Sweden to Kuwait, Saudi Arabia. I've seen inquiries concerning Farad Muhammad primarily. And so I just wanted to give an opportunity for individuals from the Nation of Islam to be able to participate with questions or comments and to enlighten those who are interested in the Nation of Islam. So if you have questions or comments today, you want to shoot me an email, you can shoot me an email at ryoung@arcstudies.org. Again, that's ryoung@arcstudies.org. Or if you want to participate live with a question or a comment concerning the Nation of Islam, or provide your take on one of the nations, plural, of Islam, give me a call, area code 646-652-2905. Again, that's area code 646-652-2905. All right, so I'm going to just run through this perspective again here, and I'm going to try to finish this in the next today, possibly. All right, so it's going to be a pretty quick ride, unless I get a question or a comment. All right, let's look at the history of the Nation of Islam. And there's a picture of Wallace Farad, or Master Farad Muhammad, who is Allah to the Nation of Islam, on the history page of the ARC Perspective, the Examination of a Nation, taking a look at the Nations of Islam. Now, they are mug shots, and many have exhibited a particular disdain for that, but let me say right off the top that it is my position, and it has been ARC's position, that had Jesus Christ been born during this time, he would have had mugshots. So it's not meant to be disparaging. You know, I know many in the Nations of Islam have denied or complained that this wasn't Farad Muhammad, and so there's a link to a particular apologetic view concerning that picture on to the Muhammad Speaks website. That's Levi Karim's website. But what I personally did was there's also a link to a nose comparison where I took that picture and I took the one that is commonly accepted, universally accepted as being Farad Muhammad. And what I did was, being the one picture faces to the right and the other one, the accepted one faces to the left, what I did was I took the one, the accepted one, and I reversed it and enlarged it, and it appears to be the exact same nose. Again, you know, it's my personal position that individuals who reject this picture do so based upon the fact that it shows Allah in mugshots, which, again, had Christ been born today, he would have been in mugshots. So that doesn't take away from their belief that he is Allah. I think that has to rise and fall on the evidence. And I think the evidence shows that he clearly is not, was clearly not the Allah of the Quran, without a doubt. And I don't believe he's deity at all. I just don't. There's no evidence to support that. And that's aside from Elijah Muhammad's claim that that's what he told him and his brother confirming that. I'm just saying there's no, I mean, if you understand what God is, then I don't think any man would claim to be God. And that's Farad Muhammad or Creflo Dollar. Doesn't make a difference to me. All right. The Nation of Islam got its start in the mind and activities of one Wallace D. Fard, an itinerant clothing salesman who appeared in the predominantly black Paradise Valley section of what is now called Detroit, Michigan. But this was back in the early 1930s. Mr. Fard, drawing on and juxtaposing Marcus Garvey's militant black nationalism with Noble Drawley's anomalous Islamic theology, weaved fanciful tales about a once great nation of what he called Asiatic black men who ruled the earth unchallenged for nearly 76 trillion years. Now, understand, everyone knows Marcus Garvey's UNIA, the United Negro Improvement Association, at the turn of last century. They were known for the uniforms that they wore, the military-style uniforms, and he wore the big hat like Napoleon with the plume, and they would have massive parades through Harlem, you know, and people would show out and wave, and the women all wore white. That sound familiar? And so at any rate, he also did have businesses. Black Star Line was his trucking line, and, you know, they were fairly successful in their endeavors. And of course, you can go online and find out what ultimately became of him, but for the most part, he ended up being jailed and deported for I believe it was like mail fraud or something like that. And so you can go online and read up more on that. But I just think it's interesting that part of it, you see that realized in the Nation of Islam under Elijah Muhammad with the military-style uniforms, the women in white, and they would love to do the exact same things with the parade-type stuff. And then Noble Drawley was the founder of the Moorish American Science Temple, and there are still Moors around today. And what Moors did was they were the first sect of black Muslims, not Muslims who were black, but black Muslims. The term Asiatic black man was realized, and it was originated, rather, in his organization, in Noble Drawley's organization, the Moorish American Science Temple. They were the first to begin to call themselves a separate nation, you know, a nation of Islam, if you will. Though they didn't use that as a formal name, that's what they believed, so much so that they carried membership cards of this nation, and they were known for flashing these cards in white people's faces to show that they no longer were under the domination of the white man. And so when you look at the juxtaposition of those two things, and there are many who believe that Wallace Fard was a guy named Wallace Dodd Ford. And again, there's a lot of information out there on that. The FBI listed him as that. The Nation of Islam claimed that he wasn't. I know they ran a whole huge thing saying, you know, prove that Dodd is flawed, you know, which, in my opinion, I thought was ridiculous because no one can prove Ford is Ford. No one's seen him since 1934. You know, now there have been some who said that he showed up at a mosque with Warith Uddin Muhammad, you know, and actually the imam last week said that he died and he knew where the grave was. I don't know, but there have been many people who said that. A lot of individuals believe he died in 1934. But at any rate, when Elijah Muhammad put that out there, that I'll give you $10,000 or whatever it is if you can prove one man is the other, you know, I just thought it was ridiculous because, you know, neither of them were around anymore. So how can you prove that whether one was the other when both of them had sort of, you know, obscure, well, Farr's background was obscure. More, as a matter of fact, Moore is the descendants of the Moorish American Science Temple. To this day, they put a picture out that they say shows Fard as a member. And many believe that Fard initially started teaching he was the reincarnation of Noble Drawley after Drawley was murdered. And so, you know, you have all that stuff out there, you know, that you can kind of get all into the intrigue of that and all of the little conspiracies. But the reality is, you know, that the Nation of Islam is a juxtaposition of those two things. In fact, Elijah Muhammad was a member in the UNI, but the Nation of Islam is clearly a juxtaposition of those two things, in that you see the uniforms and the whole showy militant type thing with the women in all white from the UNIA and the nation having your own nation, one of Islam, as well as being called Asiatic black men coming from there, not to mention the fact that Elijah Muhammad wore fez, like the Moorish American Science Temple. The hat that Elijah Muhammad, did you see him on, the sort of pill box type of hat, was worn by the Moorish American Science Temple. Only theirs was red. And so he did show up wearing the blue one with the celestial bodies, the moon and stars and stuff on it. But that clearly came from the Moorish American Science Temple. All right, Fard garnered many converts amongst the downtrodden of this impoverished community with these stories about Asiatic black men while simultaneously selling them silks and other materials that he claimed were reminiscent of those worn by their glorious ancestry. Now, there are some who have put forth that, you know, that Fard initially made up the story in order to sell the silks and was shocked with how well it went over. During the time that he used this story to sell the silks, it was at a time that was right around the demise of both of these organizations, and individuals were looking for something to believe in. And so it just sort of went over bigger than he thought, and when he realized the amount of trouble that it was getting him in over the 3.5 years that he was around, that he eventually just up and jumped ship and left because he realized that it was out of his hands or out of his control. Now, the majority of Farr's earliest members included not only those of the Negro community who sought to find some sort of answers to the despised and subjugated condition in America up to that point in time, but he also gained a large block of organized membership from Marcus Garvey's now defunct UNIA, United Negro Improvement Association, after Garvey's conviction and imprisonment on charges of mail fraud in 1923. Among this group of former Garveyites was a man named Elijah Poole, as I said. Elijah had been one of the multitudes who migrated north in search of a better life and more equitable treatment from whites during the first 3 decades of the 20th century. And that was a massive migration of blacks seeking. They looked at the north as some sort of promised land, you know, being that the South was as harsh as it was during Reconstruction and afterwards, that they thought things would be better in the North, where they felt that things would be better for them. So upon his arrival, Elijah Muhammad and the vast majority of his contemporaries found that while their economic situations improved somewhat, there was still no decrease in the degree of humiliation and subservience that they were forced to endure. Thus, Elijah joined the United Negro Improvement Association in an attempt to gain some sense of accomplishment and self-respect. Then, after arrest and deportation of Marcus Garvey, you know, Elijah Muhammad, having given his all to the organization, even rising through the rank of corporal, was crushed with how rapidly the organization just failed. How, you know, after Garvey's conviction and his subsequent permanent expulsion from the United States in 1927. Now, add to that the crash of the New York Stock Exchange in 1929, and you find Elijah Muhammad demoralized and barely making ends meet with his wife, Claire, and his children. It's at this point in his life that Elijah encounters Wallace Fard. Okay, got a question or comment? You can give me a call, area code 646-652-2905. Again, that's area code 646-652-2905. All right, unemployed and surviving by means of soup lines and seeking to bring purpose back into a life of increased misery, Elijah began attending Fard's evening meetings at the request of his wife, Clara. These meetings were being held in the basements of various Paradise Valley tenements, and believing Fard to be some sort of holy man, Elijah became one of his earliest converts. Fard, recognizing Elijah's natural leadership abilities, quickly advanced him in this new fledgling religion, changing his name from Elijah Poole to Elijah Muhammad. With the help of this new convert, Fard's organization grew to some 8,000 members by the time of his disappearance in June of 1934. In the months leading up to his disappearance, Fard had suffered repeated instances of harassment by the Detroit Police Department. Responding to rumors that this new religion called the Nation of Islam practiced human sacrifice, the police ran Fard out of town. There was a case where an individual who claimed to be a member of the Nation of Islam or misunderstood did kill someone claiming to do it in the name of the Nation of Islam, but there's no evidence that anything like that ever was taught. So seeking refuge, Fard set out for Chicago and the Nation of Islam's Temple Number 2 that was established by Elijah Muhammad in 1932. Upon reaching Chicago, Fard was immediately arrested and jailed by local authorities, who had obviously been tipped off as to his destination by the Detroit Police Department. From his jail cell, Fard sent for Elijah, promoted him to the position of chief minister, after which he instructed Elijah to return to Detroit and assume leadership of Temple Number 1. Further, he was instructed to take charge of all administrative functions of the entire movement. These are the last known instructions from Fard to Elijah prior to his disappearance. When informed of Fard's mysterious disappearance, many in the movement assumed that he had met with foul play at the hands of the Chicago Police Department. Individuals believed they took him out and shot him, which, you know, who knows? Other more devoted members contended that Fard had merely returned to Mecca to prepare himself for his impending return to redeem the original black man and to bring an end to the evil rule of the white devil. And again, I find this also troubling because, as Elijah taught in the Supreme Wisdom, Volumes 1 and 2, as well as the message to the black man, the fall of the white devil should have happened 20 years before any of these events. He said the end of the rule of the white devil was 1914. And we're at 1934 now. And the rule of Allah, the new God, the new Allah, the last of the 2,640,000,000 supreme Allahs, was supposed to have begun at the beginning of the 7,000 year, which was, again, as I said again, 1914, and certainly at the beginning of 1915. So I just think it's odd that they're having this discussion at a time when it's 20 years or two decades after when Allah is supposed to have overtaken the evil white man. All right, in an effort to quell the skeptics, Elijah began teaching that Fard, whom he began to teach, was Allah incarnate. Now, again, he did not teach this before Fard left. Now, the reasoning for that is he said Fard told him never tell anyone until he was gone. not to tell anyone until he was gone. Now, and this supposedly happened at an encounter where Elijah told him, walked up to him privately and told him, I know who you are, you're Allah. And he said, Farah told him, yes, but don't tell anyone. So, and that's the account. At any rate, after Farah disappeared, Elijah finally began to teach that he was Allah, not a prophet. Now, if you look in the Supreme Wisdom lessons, and these are lessons that every Muslim is required to learn and memorize and supposed to be able to recite from memory, okay, in those lessons, Farah is identified as the prophet. The prophet, not Allah, but so at any rate. All right, many within the organization rejected Elijah's story that Farah had been deported and left Elijah in charge, and they also rejected his leadership. This rejection soon erupted into internal fighting, which eventually fractured the movement into several divergent sects, with some of these groups even threatening the very life of Elijah. Okay, so there was no smooth transition. It's like when Elijah Muhammad died, and now you have, what, 9 nations of Islam? Well, pretty much the same thing happened when Farah left. It was not smooth as the way it's sort of depicted, that Farah left Elijah in charge, and Elijah then set about the work of building the nation of Islam. All right, I got a quick call. I'll take a call from, looks like my brother out on the West Coast. Let's see what he has to say.
Hey, greetings.
Greetings. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I see you had a program, and I wanted to apologize to you. Because once some people stays on one topic and it jumps from topic to topic, I've been busy lately and whatnot, but I did have a talk with one of the students, top student of Imam Muhammad, Wahduddin Muhammad, and we sat down and talked. So he basically gave me Shams and Lightning of the Soul to listen to. It's a 10-hour lecture, historical, that Imam Muhammad gave about the nation and its origin. And he was basically in that discussion, he was speaking about the intent of Farah Muhammad coming out here from India or Pakistan, or, you know, it was in 1920 and 30, I think they was switching over or whatever. And when he came out, the 4 schools of thought, Sunni, Shi'i, Shafi, Maliki, wanted his form of Islam, which is Ahmadiyyan sect, to accept one of the 4 schools of thought. He didn't want to do it. So what they did is they said in order for him to be validated as a Muslim to come to America and open up a market for the 4 schools of thought. So when Farah Muhammad got here, he set up a satire or some form of symbolic teachings, try to mirror it at the Trinitarian Christianity. You as a Christian probably will see a whole lot of similarities, you know, like the pictures and all that. It just seems like Christianity in a reverse. So he, that was his intent, was to get him open up a market for the Sunni Muslims. That was his intent. So he set up the lessons for those who learn the divine mathematics or the divine lessons. Those understanding those lessons will gain at the end Quran Sharif. They will win the Quran. And it was Imam Muhammad was the one who figured out all the lessons, and he the one who was given that particular Quran, and so he walked everybody into the Quran. So I just wanted to state that.
Okay.
There's so much going on. Yes, sir.
What do you know about his departure in 1934?
1934, well, actually, I happened to be in prison. I was in prison, and this is in the 80s, like 86 or 7.
Uh-huh.
And it was a gentleman while I was there, nice, even I thought he was an Arab. He heard me rapping or whatever, and he said, man, I like the way you know, and we started talking. And so I took him up to the masjid or the chaplain up in the prison, and they had a picture of Farah. You know, he had his hand, you know, that one, he has the book in his hand or whatever.
Right.
And he said, that's my uncle. So everybody looking at him, the people who used to be in the nation, like, what do you mean that's your uncle? He said, that's my uncle. That's Farah Muhammad. That's my uncle. He's from Fiji Island. The guy was from Fiji Island. So he was telling once he went once far left Pakistan or India, he went into Fiji Island. And he has a family base out there. So the gentleman had came down here. They had a they have a meat market right now. This day is in San Leandro, California, off Paris Street. There's a meat market. So he said that he's buried right now at the Chapel of Time. Yeah, yeah, that was his family.
Okay.
So they have in Fiji. They have a his gravesite is at the Chapel of Chimes. He's known as Professor Dr. Imam Imam Fard Professor Imam Fard Muhammad of Pakistan. So that's there right now at Chapel of Chimes in Hayward, California.
In Hayward, California?
Okay. Yes, sir.
Okay. Wow. What about the, you know, I don't know how convinced I am of it, but I remember looking on the, someone had directed me to the FBI's Freedom of Information, and I mean, you can't trust the FBI, but they ran this whole thing on their site talking about Wallace Dart Ford.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that before.
Yeah.
Wallace Dart Muhammad, and I think that might be true also, but he was going by so many different nicks, different names. And I think when they imposed the name that he was actually a lie himself, it's like a satire. It's, you know, it's really like you have to figure out a lot of their teachings was trying to run it like Jesus Christ, you know, is known to be anthropomorphically God-man. So they try to reverse it and say that, no, this is the God-man. So they was borrowing a lot of stuff from Trinitarian Christianity. A lot of
you don't think that any of it came from, how familiar are you with the Moorish American Science Temple?
Yeah, I'm very much familiar. And that's what, and you're right. You are 100% right that he took stuff from Marcus Garvey, Booker T. Washington, and the Moorish Temple. He just took all of them aspects and put it in one and just put the name Nation of Islam on it and made it symbolical. But he did borrow from a lot of those concepts, the marching, the drilling, the dress code, and et cetera. And,
I know, I've seen a picture from a Moore sent me that's, and you can, it's not, you know, it's not, the resolution's not really that great, but in the picture he said it was a Fard that was in the back left corner. It was a picture of Moore's, and it looks like a light-skinned gentleman, but
I can't
say whether or not that's him. But
he had a beard? Did he have a beard?
You know what? I don't think he had a beard. I think it looks just
He looked like he had tie dyes, like he was tie-dyed, light-skinned African-American. I saw the picture. They had a picture of him actually having dinner with some of the people, because the imam, my imam, was the muaddin, the one who called the prayer. He called the prayer for Wallace, Fard Muhammad. And Imam Muhammad at that time was in training.
Yeah.
So Fard Muhammad was actually the imam at the at this masjid in Oakland. It's called the last final temple was 77, and then it flipped over to a masjid. He was training Imam Muhammad, and our imam was the one who called the prayer. So they had a picture of him sitting down eating with them, and he was a fairly light gentleman.
Okay, I know that I had read somewhere too that your imam, Wardithuddin Muhammad, W.D. Muhammad. That Fard had told Elijah when Clara was pregnant with him that's where the initials came from, W.D. Muhammad, W.D. Fard.
Right. They read it by the door, in the back of his door, of Elijah Muhammad's house, W.D. They kept saying W.D. And they said that that's where you get your initials from.
Okay.
Got it from Fard Muhammad.
Well, and just one last thing, if you don't mind.
No problem.
I also read somewhere that Fard showed up at a mosque, I guess in the 70s or 80s, and that the Imam Wardithuddin Muhammad didn't announce that he was Fard, but afterwards he identified him as Fard.
Right. He did.
Okay.
He did, because, you know, during that time of the split, it was Farrakhan who picked it up in 77. Now, Muhammad was he was announced right on the spot as being the inheritor of the nation. He was going to take him to the next level. Everybody cheered him. You've probably seen the picture. They holding him up. Farrakhan is there himself.
Right.
It's a picture of him. So that 100,000 group, it was like almost 150,000. They split up. Some people went and carried and followed Farrakhan. He wanted to rekindle the nation. And Imam Muhammad took him right into the Quran. Mm-hmm. So he did was among mugging, but he said if he would have did it at that time, by the psychology of the people, they might have assassinated him.
Okay.
So it was real careful for him. He didn't want to really just expose him right on the spot, and then people just out of sensitivity start, you know, moving out on him. So he was really going. He was in a dilemma during that time with Malcolm X. He the one who encouraged Malcolm X, Malik, to go to Hodge because he was so loyal to his father. He said, no, you go to Hodge. I've been there twice, and you will see the difference. So that's how he went to Hodge. He was encouraged by Imam Muhammad. They both were outcasts of the nation during the time.
Well, and that's the thing, because if I remember correctly, your imam had been, I guess Elijah had expelled him on more than one occasion from
right.
the nation. At one point, he even started a couple of businesses in order to support himself, but then he would come back, and his father would immediately accept him and reinstall him as a minister, even though that was, like, unprecedented for anyone. And it's, you know, at one point he made the comment that my son is going to, and I'm just paraphrasing, is going to take it to the next level or something
right,
like that.
Right, exactly. That was the thing. He heard a tape. He was on his deathbed. He was supposed to be real sick. And with some of the ministers was trying to really press upon what Imam Muhammad was doing at the time of Wallace, and they played some tapes for him. They said, look at your son. He's not even talking about the message that you guys have. He's talking about something totally different. And he heard what he was talking about, and he said that boy got it. That's the level he wanted him on. In fact, Elijah Muhammad is stating, saying that white man is the devil. We have many black devils. I hope y'all didn't take that literally, that the white man is the devil. He said we got many black devils also. So he cleared it up that all this stuff was metaphors, you know, it didn't have anything to do with the white man being literally the devil. You know, it contradicts science anyway, so anybody who knows anything about the ice age and the equator shift and everything, that would contradict that and blow all that theory up out of the water.
Well, let me tell you, I appreciate the fact that you called today, my brother, because I on the air, want to make sure that I apologize to you, because the type of discussion that we had last week, we should not have had.
Right, you're right.
And I want to apologize to you. That's really been weighing heavily on me. I mean, men can disagree, but we can disagree honorably.
You're right.
It should never digress into, to the level I believe that there was disrespectful to what
yes.
we both stand for. And so
right.
I'm
you're
glad
right.
you called.
No, I'm glad that I had a chance. I wasn't gonna call no more. My wife was like, well, you know, he don't know that much about the nation, only from the book sources. I got people. My aunt, my great aunt, was in the nation. She came from Louisiana to Oakland. This is in 1940,
mm-hmm.
and this is before the massacre that's here, the one out of 10. She was there. She was Captain Ella. That was in the 1940s. So I had already had firsthand accounts from people who was there. A lot of stuff we didn't get in that area because it's just so mixed up in so many parables and stuff. I know that stuff can lead you like the way you did. It'd be so long and drowned out. Just listening to what the message, it was a nationalistic. It didn't have anything to do with religion. In fact, they are a minority among the Muslims in America right now. In the prisons, at no point they ran the prisons. Imam Muhammad in the 70s was the one who took over the ministries and the chaplains all throughout the ministries for the Muslims in America right now to this day. It's from his community. He was the one who was doing the propagating. It wasn't the nation. So they are a very small minority among the African-American Muslims here. We have more than like 8 million.
Well, I was thinking about when I was talking about the membership of the Nation of Islam rising to 8,000 members back in the 30s, and I was thinking about that as I said it, because I don't think that any of the factions of the Nation of Islam are anywhere near, you know, half of that now. Maybe they may reach, and let me clarify what I mean. I know a lot of people use Nation of Islam rhetoric,
mm-hmm.
but not really in the Nation of Islam.
Right.
Really
5%, 7%.
I knew one guy back, you know, 25 years ago, I remember he used to always proclaim Nation of Islam theology to me all the time. I was in the Marine Corps at the time while we're sitting around getting high. And I just sat there and I thought to myself, you see, because again, you know, good friends of my family were in the Nation of Islam. I grew up recognizing who they were. As a matter of fact, they, one of them still lives a couple of doors from me, one of my father's friends, and he's still a minister. He and his son are ministers in the Nation of Islam. And I've watched them fluctuate in and out. I've watched them in the nation for a while, and then they get out there and run some game for a while. And well, let me take that back. The father I haven't seen do that in a while. The son I have, you know. Mm-hmm. But this guy in the Marine Corps, I remember his name was Shahid. Mm-hmm. And this guy was sitting. I'm sitting there listening to this guy, and he's telling me about the Nation of Islam and all the rest of this stuff. And I'm sitting there, you know, passing this guy a joint. You know, it's you know, and I just never said anything to him. I never busted him out, but I knew there was no way. And so over the years, I've known a lot of people who've had affiliations with the rhetoric, and I'm not using rhetoric as a negative way. I'm using rhetoric in the intent of the word. They, you know, the language of the Nation of Islam, but you really don't stand for the things that, you know, that it stands for. You know, whether one agrees or disagrees. So when you take away those people with the rhetoric, what is the true number? And I really don't believe it's that significant. I really don't believe as far as the number. I do agree with you that as black Muslims go, and I've said this in my perspective, I believe the Nation of Islam is as much Muslim as they are Christian, and I don't believe they're Christian at all. So I don't. I think that they use the word Muslim and the word Islam, but they, from what I've seen in Islam, you know, and this again is someone on the outside looking in. I don't see them practicing those types of precepts.
Right.
It seems to be more a rhetorical thing.
Right. Right. It's a cultural. It's like I think it would be like my grandmother. She raised me from Louisiana, and she's a Christian. She raised me, not my biological mother, but she was a Christian. We went to church. We, you know, all these things. So when I accepted Islam, I naturally felt that I had to talk to her, you know, because she raised me. Now, you know, out of respect, you know, and she's from down south. So I went and told her that I accepted Islam. And she asked me, what are you telling me that for? I said, well, I'm, you know, you raised me. She said, look, whatever it is that changed you from the way you used to be, it's coming from God because you was terrible. So she's saying, I don't have to justify what I believe in to nobody. Just do, you know, do right and be good. Mm-hmm. But some people in my family, majority of them say they're Christian, but they don't do nothing. They don't go to church. They ain't part of nothing. They just culturally, and that's what it is. Them brothers out there in the East Coast, they can smoke and drink, and then they call themselves God. So that's the problem. If you think you're God, you're going, it's okay for you to do anything. You don't have no laws.
Right.
So that's the problem in that language right there in itself. I mean, you can do whatever you want to do. So that's in the East Coast. All throughout the East Coast, those brothers take a little bit of what the nation was saying, and then they formed their own organization. And there are some big, big organizations out there, 5%ers, they got 7%ers.
Oh, I've never heard of 7%ers.
Yeah, yeah, they got 7%ers. And out here in Oakland, they have, if you ever heard about the gentlemen who crashed up the liquor store in Oakland?
No.
They crashed up a liquor store out here in Oakland and was the Arabs, the Yemenis who got these liquor stores. They crashed. They caught them on camera. They said it's the Nation of Islam, but what it is an offspring from the Nation of Islam. They call it Your Black Muslim Bakery.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Didn't the founder of that die not long ago?
Yeah, yes, sir. That's Yusuf Bey. He's right around the corner
from me.
He's right around the corner from me. Now he personally was with Elijah Muhammad back in the beginning. Him and Farrakhan had some disagreements about. When Elijah Muhammad died, about Salam's, they had Salam's restaurants. So he wanted to take over all the restaurants and came out to Oakland to get Your Black Muslim Bakery. They had a shootout.
Okay.
Out here in Yusuf Bey ran Farrakhan and them out of Oakland, California. And to this day, he's been independent. He don't call it Salam's restaurant or anything like that. It's Your Black Muslim Bakery. And he's another offspring of the nation, but he don't follow Farrakhan.
Okay. Are you familiar with the Canadian, the Nation of Islam Canada?
No, I never heard of that. I mean, when you said that was new to me. I had never heard of
There's a link to it on our site. It was founded by a guy named Minister Linwood X, who was with Elijah Muhammad, and I believe he tried to go along with Farrakhan but broke away from Farrakhan, and so it's an independent organization. It still exists, and the way I found out about it is individuals. The number one hit, the number one question, or the number one inquiry on ARC sites is Nation of Islam. It comes from everywhere. And, you know, being a webmaster, I can trace where it came from.
Right.
You know, and that's how I found the Nation of Islam Canada, someone from their site. So there must be a link somewhere. From their site came. And that's how I found them. So there you're right. There are numerous, but I didn't realize that your black bakery, Black Muslim Bakery, was a separate group theologically too. I mean, theologically
they got some of the same concepts, you know, for Muhammad, etc. But they just don't follow Farrakhan. They're independent. And they got some other things. They use them as a security service in Oakland.
Okay.
They walk around schools and get security for them in a lot of the clubs. And a lot of executives use them out here in Oakland as security. But they don't have no ties with Farrakhan and them. Farrakhan's mosque is out here. It's 55 out here in East Oakland. And it's totally separate from your Black Muslim Bakery. They have something totally different. Then you have another group called the Ansel Muhammads. And Ansel Muhammads is totally different from all of them also. They don't follow Yusuf Bey or Farrakhan. They got their own basic concepts. That's an offshoot of it.
Okay. I know that Malachi York at one time.
Exactly.
When they were the Ansar Allah community first.
I got it. That's how I got Islam, coincidentally.
Okay.
I was in Vallejo, California, and I came from Oakland. My father was working at the naval shipyard there, and I meet a gentleman from New York, Puerto Rican guy named Mustafa. Me and him talked. He said, "I like you, man." We started talking about Islam. I didn't know nothing about Islam, really, at that point. Then he was telling me some stuff, and I was like, "Well, wait a minute, about the Bible." And I have remember reading. I read the Bible, so I was like, in my mind, "Now, I believe a little bit of that, but something else you're telling me, I can't go for it." We end up going to New York on Bushwick Avenue. I went to New York with him in '86 to the actual place where his name wasn't Malachi York at the time. It was Ali Mam Isa Al Hadi Al Mahdi. That was his name. He was calling himself the Mahdi. He was calling himself Jesus at
right,
the same time.
I have some of the old the magazine-like book.
Yeah. I went to New York. I went there to the actual temple. They had the Ansel Mahari, it was the Hebrew, like you said, Ansari Hebrew community. I went right to that thing. They were dressed in uniforms. They were brown, green, and white. You have to graduate to certain levels. And he ended up, the brother Mustafa, we came back to Vallejo, and he had to go back and get his wife because his wife stayed. She was from New York. She wanted to stay with her family, and the brother, Malachi York, said that he had to halal his wife, meaning that before he can have relations with his wife, Malachi York had to do it first. So he flew back out to New York immediately and got his wife.
Now, they had a group here as well. When I first came I'm in Columbus, Ohio. And when I first came here, there was a small group that belonged. That's where I got the magazine from. And I remember meeting one of them. They used to wear all white at the time.
Right, exactly.
And I remember there was always someone standing outside of the apartment building they were in. And I remember, talking to the guy one day, and he told me he was the eyes of Allah. And so someone had to always be there awake because Allah could see what was going on through their eyes.
Wow.
By Allah, he was talking about who eventually became Malachi York.
Is that right?
Yeah. And so,
yeah, because he, they call the Nuwapians now.
Nuwapians, right. Well, actually, you're right. Were they Nuwapians? I think they became something after that.
They started taking
Indian names.
Yeah, they went from
Blackstone or. But go ahead, I didn't mean to cut you off.
They took the concepts from Nubia, created a language base from there. Like I was explaining to you about that, how they was trying to study that back in the days about Egypt. And so what they did was call themselves Nuwapians and develop a language of their own, and they're called Nuwapians. So they can speak in the language. It's kind of like out there. Ain't nobody translate, only them, like a slang.
Yeah.
And so they are saying that they're the Nubian people. And,
this is what they started calling. They started calling themselves, after Nuwabians, they started calling themselves the Yamasee Native American Moors of the Creek Nation.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was right before Malachi York was arrested. They started calling themselves that, and he took a name like Chief Buffalo. And I'm not trying to, you know, I can't remember exactly what the name was he took, but it was Chief something.
Yeah.
It was a new name.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they still around. I catch up with them on a service called Pow Talk. And they have a few, it's powtalk.com. You can use your mic and go in and talk. They have an African-American category. They have a room. They open in Wapians. I was talking to them about Mustafa, and the brother said, you know Mustafa? I said, yeah, and I told him that I went to New York because I seen the brother Mustafa praying in the park. I saw him praying, and when he fell on his face, I brought him back to what I read in Genesis. When Abraham was given good news, he fell on his face, and that's how I sparked the conversation with him. And you're right, he had on all white with a backpack, and he was selling oils and selling incense. And so I became close with him, and then we ended up actually going to New York. And then after the brother, Ali Mamisa, tried to have intercourse with his wife, that's when all that just went downhill, and I started studying on my own at that point.
Well, it seems like that was the problem that eventually did him in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, with the women. And they had so much money at one point, they found over $150,000 in change in one of the rooms. When they went in to arrest him and all the property he had, they seized a lot of property and money. And it was like, as a lot of money was involved, and he had $150,000 in change in one room.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, York started calling himself Chief Black Eagle. I remembered in the Macon Telegraph, the newspaper there, at the I just pulled it up because I knew he had called himself that, but he had claimed immunity from prosecution because he was part of the Yamasee tribe. He was Chief Black Eagle, and so he started evolving again, you know. And it's a shame, you know, that it's a, for me, it's a good example again. You know, you're a Muslim. I'm a Christian.
Right. Right.
I've seen individuals who have done a disservice to both.
Exactly.
You know, by claiming deity, by trying to be something that they're not. You know, there's an old saying that says, "Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolute."
Father divine. That's where you got the concept of being God from.
Yeah.
The guy, Father Divine, I'm not that old, so
yeah. You'll
probably know about that more than
yeah.
me. Father Divine,
oh, yeah.
That's where he got the concept of being God, from him.
Okay, Father Divine.
And then and that's how they named him Allah, for Allah. It came from Father Divine's teaching because he was real prevalent back in the
right.
back in them times.
Father
so he
Divine,
took concept
Eddie
from all kind of stuff. Yeah.
I've done some studies on them. But, you know, I just always thought it interesting that, you know, Muslim, what does Muslim mean? One who submits?
Yeah, Muslims mean one who renders service to Allah in peace. It's mu, meaning you all. They don't mean like nothing singular. It's mu, meaning you all, in salama, musalama. That means one who renders service in peace.
And what does Islam mean?
Islam means in submission with peace. So if there's no peace coming from any of them, they own something else.
Well, and that the point I'm making, I guess, is this, that if that is, in fact, what it means.
That's what it means.
Why,
study
well,
Arabic.
Yeah, that's what it means, and I'm not disagreeing with you. In fact, I'm agreeing with you. That being that what it means, then how could they then turn it around and take it for themselves, submit to them? If they're supposed to be submitting to Allah. You know,
right.
Instead submit to, do you see what I'm saying? Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I have to sit and tell you, I'm embarrassed by the fact that I watch quote-unquote Christian television, and, you know, I don't submit Christianity to what it's become. I agree with you. That picture on the wall of Ted Nugent, my grandmother had one too. That's not a picture of the biblical Jesus. It's not. It never has been. People were duped into believing it, and many people had it. The practices that I see people, conduct are they're not what I study as Christianity.
Right.
So my whole point is this, that, you know, I've watched people corrupt everything. We can disagree, but we have to disagree with the integrity that we are, in fact, following the correct thing. And that's why when I wrote my perspective, instead of responding to the offshoots, I responded to what Elijah had to say.
Right. But, you know, a lot of them get directly checked by the Quran, because Allah is saying who the people is. They call him, a Nasara or a Nasira. And they're saying that these people are helpers and they're nearest to you in faith.
Hmm.
You will know them because they're not arrogant and they study and they are helpers. So that's the attribute of a Christian in the Quran. So that's how we know when we get. There ain't nothing that a Muslim can say about the work that Christianity has done for years, going out feeding people and stuff like that. So, you know, Allah's letting them go, okay, what are you arguing with them for, and they doing things? What are you doing?
Yeah.
So it's not about the argument thing. What it's about is they nearest to you. If you follow good attributes from them, you're going to end up being what you're claiming and professing to being. So it ain't all about it. Christianity is wrong, and that ain't nowhere in the Quran where it says Christianity is wrong. It's always, they say they will go to heaven and everything, that they got some believers among them, and they are not arrogant, and they study. So you can't come up to a Christian, an average Christian, or someone who study and then try to, you know, refute the basis of what they believe in. If you're coming on that basis, you're going to find somebody that's going to put you in some deep water. That's what happened to me. I got a little Islam and thought I knew something, and I bumped into a brother, and he put me in hot water. I was shaking and nervous and everything. He said, brother, I'm not here to try to put down what you believe in. He said, but that ain't, you know, if you got the truth, what do you want to harm me for? He said, this is what I believe in. And then he took me to the Quran and checked me with my own book. So that's why I never came out with that thesis, never again.
Yeah.
Trying to go into the Bible, and I don't do that, because you got some good Christians. I know them myself, that's doing some tremendous work. Tremendous work.
I got one more subject I'd like to broach with you if you got a few more minutes here.
Yeah, I have a few. I'm doing some little cooking, but I'm right here.
Okay. What you cooking?
I'm cooking some chicken strips. They call halal chicken strips, and they are very nice. Better than McDonald's.
Yeah, I told my wife I can eat chicken anytime. But
man, these things is, whoo, McDonald's don't have nothing on these.
Let me ask you this. Yes. Last week you had mentioned that something about Farge's death, and
yes.
you're aware of where he's buried at?
Yes, sir.
Is he buried in Fiji or is he in America?
Oh, he's in Hayward, California.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yeah, what it was, the Imam, I took a course at the Masjid. It's called the Imam class. And what it does is give you the history of the Nation of Islam, so you can see what was the common thought among African Americans about Islam. The first thing they think of is the bow tie, somebody said with a bean pie. So we went through all that history, and then they took us on a tour to a grave site, and it's a Muslim grave site, and they showed us. And the brother asked me, he said, Rashid, who was that? I said, I don't know. And he said, look at the name. It was Imam Professor Dr. Muhammad of Pakistan. He said, that's Farge Muhammad. And, you know, I'm looking like, you know, is you serious? He said, brother, that's Farge Muhammad. When we leave here, I'm going to take it to his family. After that, we went to their halal meat shop, and all his family was right there. They looked just like him on the picture. They Fiji, got the big noses. They came from Fiji. So his gravesite is right at Chapel of Chimes in Hayward, California.
Okay. Wow. Wow. I wonder how many other people in the Nation of Islam have ever heard that before.
Oh, they heard it. They're just going to deny it, because all that satire stuff make them think that Elijah went up to a spaceship, and all that stuff is number satire. That's all that is.
Yeah.
Number satire metaphors.
As far as I know, only Farrakhan's group believes that.
Right. And this is something you don't know. This is something that shocked me. Shocked me. And I was like, oh, I said, can I get this tape? And the brother said, no, I can't let you have this tape. What had happened, remember, I don't know if you heard of a group called Whammy. Probably heard of them.
What's
Whammy is from Saudi Arabia. And the group Whammy, yeah, what they do is they give you free Qurans, and then on Ramadan they give all the masjids dates. They send the dates from there and they give you free Qurans.
Okay.
What happened was they approached Imam Muhammad about accepting the Wahhabi or Wahhab school of thought, and they was going to give him $40 million. But he had to leave his ideas about Islam alone and then pick up one of the four schools of thought or the Wahhab. And Muhammad said, no, I'm not doing that. So he left Saudi Arabia. Farrakhan heard about it and went to Saudi Arabia to get the $40 million. So they trapped him about Muhammad. I saw the tape. They trapped him about it, his views about Far Muhammad. And, you know, those guys are very strict when it comes to you applying the name to God. They'll do something to you. So they had him in a hot chair. So he went through the Masonic, you know, the nation was built on the Masons and all. He went through all that trying to get up out of it. And Imam Muhammad had to fly back out to Saudi Arabia to get him. He had to go get him or they was going to put him to death. So right on the spot, he accepted Islam. If you check right now to verify that, you will see right now they don't fast during February 25th. They don't fast during that time no more. They fast in Ramadan with the mainstream Muslims around the earth. But he's gradually moving them towards Al-Islam, and he promised the people in Saudi Arabia that he would do that, that he would start gradually moving them step by step towards Al-Islam. So they took all the chairs and now they are fasting with the mainstream Muslims instead of February 25th.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it. I mean, I've learned a ton of stuff from you today, my brother. How did you spell that group's name? What did you call them again? Whammy?
Whammy, yes. W-H-A-M-M-Y-O-W. I don't know how to. I think that's how you spell it, but they are the ones who give out the free Qurans, and they are the ones who give out dates. They send dates to all the masjids out here. But
okay.
Part of that is they won't be control over your masjid to an extent, so they can push their ideas. You know, they got so many far out ideas out there.
Right.
And then if you're saying anything that opposes the school of thought, it's a money thing. It's all about, it's about money.
Right.
And Imam Muhammad is hurting their money because he's exposing them about their misperceptions about what Islam is. I mean, what do you mean blowing yourself up? It ain't nothing nowhere in the Quran say blow yourself up.
Right.
It's totally to the contrary.
I had read a surah, I think it was in the fourth surah, where it says, and I'm paraphrasing, you can correct me here, that if a Muslim even kills another Muslim by accident, then he's indebted to the family.
And oh, yeah, exactly.
You know, so there's nothing on there about going in there killing them on purpose like that.
No.
By accident, you're indebted to that family, the family of the Muslim you kill.
Exactly. You do have to pay for the turmoil you have, and if you kill even somebody, you don't have to be no Muslim or Christian, unjustly, it's like killing all of mankind. If you go out there doing things like that in the name of something else. So, their ideas, they're so far gone, we don't even waste time arguing with them.
Right.
There's too many thousands of years concepts they're going on. And it just by you being different, they're going to not disbelieve you anyway, just because you're different. You got to follow them or you don't have Islam. And it's an Arabic trick. That's why we got it. That's how I got into studying Arabic,
right.
Aramaic, and Hebrew, is because that's the trick they use with us is, that's your language. Okay, that's your language. So what? You know, so what? That's the language. But, you know, we know from that they don't speak what the Quran is saying. They speak in something totally different, and it's all about money. And how they get it is through the hadith.
Well, I tell you what, that's the danger of zealotry, my brother. I mean, it's one thing to be zealous for what you believe. It's another to become a zealot. I'm coming up on the last minute of the broadcast here. I just want to say before we go off air that I appreciate you calling again, and it's truly been enlightening to talk to you. So, again, I appreciate
likewise,
you calling him, Mom.
Okay, likewise. I'm going to stay in contact. I'm going to be listening here and there. And like I said, you have my information. You can feel free to call or whatever. And I'll be open for that. So, once again, if I didn't offend anyone, that wasn't my intent. So, I'll say peace to you.
All right. And then same here, my brother. I thank you very much. All right. So, anyway, broadcast took a different turn today. I'm actually glad it did. Glad I got a chance to talk to the Imam again. In order to afford him the respect that he really should have gotten last week. We can disagree about things, but we need to disagree honorably because, again, we're trying to stand for what it is that we believe, and you don't do that by disrespecting another, and I felt like, speaking for myself, that while I disagreed, I felt like the way I did it was really disrespectful to him. So I appreciate the fact that he called. I appreciated the integrity of him accepting my apology for that. So at any rate, we'll pick up the broadcast again tomorrow. Until then, this is Rick Young, the apologist. See you next time.
Thank you for joining me for today's edition of ARC Studies Live. I'm Rick Young. The Apologist segment focuses exclusively on addressing your questions and comments concerning hardcore doctrinal issues relating to biblical difficulties, countercult studies, and Christian apologetics. For more information about ARC, go to the World Wide Web at www.arcstudies.org. Again, that's www.arcstudies.org.